Hello and welcome to the very beginning of our sleep module. This is the first of four core content presentations, and this one is called The Science and the Benefits. It's like the overview, the introduction, and really what is sleep and what goes on during sleep, and I'm excited to share all this information with you. Like most of our presentations, it's all just education and inspiration and not medical advice. And if you're presenting this stuff to your own clients, make sure that you're letting them know that you're not diagnosing a disease, you're not telling them they have insomnia, you're not telling them anything. You're basically helping them to look for imbalances that contribute to sleep issues. So this is a quote from Dr. Seuss, who is one of my favorite authors. I read him a lot over the years as my kids were growing up. You know you're in love when you can't fall asleep, because reality is finally better than your dreams. We wish that that was the reason that a lot of folks can't fall asleep. For some it might be, but a lot of times the reason they can't fall asleep is not because their reality is better than their dreams, but because there's something going on in their brain. So for you to be able to really help people with sleep, which is a major problem that so many people have, and it's a major disruption to their entire endocrine system, their brain system, their neurotransmitters, their gut. There's so many things that have an impact from lack of sleep. And so it's really important that you focus on helping people to understand sleep and to get the best of it. A good night's sleep does wonders for the body and brain. So let's go ahead and look at that. Here's a really cool infographic. I did not create this. I found this. So there's all these great things that happen in sleep, all these health benefits. It improves memory. It gives you sharper attention, helps people to focus better. It decreases stress. It helps you maintain a healthy weight. And when we look at the endocrinology of sleep, we'll see very specifically why that happens. It helps everybody just to overall stay healthy and vibrant, and increase oxygen circulation, increase the activity of mitochondria, increase the ability to detox and get rid of things that are kind of clog up the mechanism. If we don't get rid of them, all the metabolic waste that accumulate during the day need to be eliminated, and sleep is the way to do that. It helps people to live better, to be more creative, and there's a lot of studies, and I do have a few studies to share with you to show you some of the stuff, so if you want to go deeper. So let's look at some facts about sleep. Our society today is sleep deprived. If we look back statistically, between 1910 and 1960, the average sleep duration was 9 hours. Right now, the current average is 7.5 hours. I find that actually hard to believe, because most people I know sleep, you know, less than that. But I think they take into account children as well as adults. A third of the population sleeps 6 hours or less. That's huge. The estimate on sleep studies is that the average adult needs between 8 and 8.5 hours of sleep. When was the last time you got 8 or 8.5 hours of sleep? I know I rarely get between 8 and 8.5 hours of sleep. And kids need between 9 and 10, and actually when they're really little, they need up to 12. I remember when my kids were little and they finally started sleeping through the night, they would generally sleep 11 to 12 and sometimes 13 hours straight, which is a blessing for parents. Shift workers actually usually sleep less than 5 hours per workday, because it's really hard for them because they're off schedule. Everybody else is getting up, they're going to sleep. If they live in a household with other people, there's a lot of interruptions and disruptions, whereas if they're sleeping during the night where everybody else is sleeping, there doesn't tend to be as many interruptions, unless, of course, you have teenagers in the house on the weekend and then they're coming in at 3 in the morning, which could wake you up. Sleep problems add about $15.9 billion to the U.S. healthcare costs. So all the implications of lack of sleep, of the physiologic and biochemical imbalances that lack of sleep produces, cost us, just in the U.S. alone, almost $16 billion. And I say that with a B, billion, not million, but billion. That's a tremendous amount of money. And there are ways that we can help people to not contribute to that huge cost. More than 1,500 deaths a year are caused by drivers falling asleep at the wheel. And it's really tragic, and it can come on suddenly, and people don't even realize it. One of my patients, when I was back in California, her son, college student, decided that he and his friend were going to head up into the mountains and go skiing. And they'd just come through studying for exams, and they were all excited, and he fell asleep at the wheel and died. It's really tragic when this stuff happens. So it's really important that you impress upon people the importance of not operating heavy machinery and not driving when you're sleep deprived, because you may feel like you can do it, but it comes on really, really suddenly when you're sleep deprived. So it's really important. There was a really good video, I think it was on YouTube, that you may want to take a look at, that went through, you know, some statistics related to that. So let's look at some scary sleep statistics from the National Institute of Health, and I've given you a link there that you can go for. School-age children need at least 10 hours of sleep daily, teens need 9 to 10 hours, and adults need 7 to 8. Nearly 30% of adults reported an average of less than 6 hours of sleep per day, and this was in 2005 and 2007. And in 2009, only 31% of high school students reported getting at least 8 hours of sleep on an average school night. So here we have these kids. They're just learning how to drive cars. They're in high school, preparing to graduate. They're looking at becoming these responsible kids. Some of them might even be, you know, substance abusing or using, maybe not even abusing, and they think they're invincible. So a tired kid is not going to say, no, I'm too tired to drive. And it's scary because there are a lot of bad things can happen. So let's look at a few other tidbits and statistics related to sleep. 70% of Americans are sleep deprived. One of the most common causes of being tired is actually lack of sleep. So when you have a patient come in and say, hey, I'm tired, I'm fatigued, can you help me? You know, as a practitioner, you gotta investigate how much are they sleeping. Because a lot of people poo-poo it, they don't pay attention to it, they don't realize they're looking for the hormones out of balance. What's going on with my thyroid? What's happening with my adrenals? Do I have neurotransmitter imbalances? Do I just need to, you know, take some stimulants, healthy stimulants, adrenal restoratives, in order to get my energy back? When indeed the answer is often right there in front of you, is sleep. So if you're working with folks who are tired, you've got to explore the sleep connection and really get good at experimenting with the various things that we're going to be sharing with you that help people to get a good night's sleep. According to Dr. Mark Hyman, who is a famous functional medicine doctor, the most important thing you can do for your health is to have enough sleep. And I would agree with that. I've seen major shifts in that. And it's hard to even convince us as the practitioners that sleep is that important. But hopefully this presentation and the subsequent ones will help you to see how important it is to really dig in and help your people with their sleep. Insufficient sleep leads to an imbalance between melatonin and growth hormone. And especially in kids, this can lead to stunted growth, but in everybody, decreased repair, cellular repair, and slower healing. All those things happen during the night while you're asleep. Magic that happens while we're sleeping. So let's look at some of the benefits of sleeping. Well, a lot of your patients and clients are coming in to see you because they have excess body weight. They are carrying some extra fat, some of them especially around the middle. Well, during sleep, we reduce cortisol and increase leptin. Reducing cortisol helps us to burn more fat. Increasing leptin helps to control the appetite and the surge and the flow of the appetite, which helps to eat less, so therefore burn fat. I will tell you for myself that when I'm sleep deprived, I have a hard time getting satiated with food throughout the day. I'm hungry, I have the tendency to be wanting to snack and be looking for food even when I'm not hungry. So I tend to be hungrier, but then I don't get satiated as quickly. And I actually gain weight when I'm not sleeping as well. And I've had this happen over and over again when I've been on vacation and active and sleeping well, and then come back and not changed what I'm eating, the amount of eating, and maybe even backed off on the amount of eating, but then found myself put on a couple of extra pounds. And it has to do with the hormonal balance that happens during sleep. And we'll go into much more detail on that on the video related to the endocrinology of sleep. It also helps to increase lean body mass, but also growth and repair, because it enhances growth hormone and DHEA production. There's a surge of growth hormone that happens about an hour or so after somebody falls asleep, and there are multiple growth hormone surges that happen with regard to the sleep cycles. And the first one is the biggest one. So when people go to bed later than they should, they miss out on that big growth hormone surge. Growth hormone helps the body to put down lean and to burn fat, in addition to helping with repair. DHEA is a growth and repair hormone. Okay, so sleep enhances the production of these hormones, which will help with growth and repair. It enhances focus and attention. There's a lot of studies that actually measure people who are sleep deprived and then measure when they're not sleep deprived. It's much easier to stay focused and attentive. So if we have a lot of children that might be having attention deficit or diagnosed with attention deficit and put on medications without really looking at how are they sleeping, are they sleeping enough, and what's the quality of their sleep. Sleep enhances detoxification and metabolic waste removal. In the Chinese medicine system, the liver and gallbladder are active in the early hours of sleep. So if we miss out on that, we're not as effectively detoxing and removing the metabolic wastes. It enhances learning, memory, and creativity for a number of reasons. One is the decrease in the detoxification that happens when you're sleep deprived creates some issues with the hippocampus and other parts of the brain being not as on, being kind of irritated by the toxins. It improves insulin sensitivity. There are lots and lots of studies that show that even one night of bad sleep in an otherwise healthy person can create a temporary insulin resistance. So what about people who are maybe not even as healthy and they're having consistent deprivation of sleep? That's one of the key underlying causes, in my opinion, of insulin resistance and why we have so much in the way of insulin resistance in even younger and younger people. It decreases cancer risk because the melatonin, when a person is sleeping deeply, they've got more melatonin being produced, and melatonin is protective against cancer, especially breast cancer. It enhances the production of serotonin, which in turn decreases depression and anxiety and helps people to stay less obsessive and more focused. It reduces inflammation. It's found that C-reactive protein is higher when we get less than 6 hours of sleep. So when someone is being deprived of sleep, their C-reactive protein goes up, which increases the risk for cardiovascular disease and cancer and other inflammatory diseases. And sleep has been shown to enhance endurance and stamina. And so it's really important for our athletes and our kids to get enough sleep. So, the effects of sleep deprivation. There have been a lot of nurse and shift worker studies, and what they found is that it leads to a higher incidence of heart disease. Sleep deficit leads to performance loss, slow reaction time, impaired memory, and decreased motivation. So people, when they're deprived of sleep, they don't have the reaction. So if you're driving a car, you're not going to respond as quickly if there's an emergency. One time we had a friend who had been having difficulty sleeping when her son was real young, and she actually went into this panic mode and she ran away. I mean, she just got into this altered state of consciousness from the consistent lack of sleep, and it was really scary. She finally got it back together. Nobody knew where she was. We were like all over, like calling everybody we knew. She had gone and taken a bus and gone down, you know, a couple of 6 hours away. That was when I lived in San Francisco, not San Francisco, but near San Francisco, and she was actually found in LA, which is scary when people do weird stuff because of lack of sleep. But The brain uptake of glucose drops as much as 7% with sleep deprivation. So when the brain can't get enough glucose, what happens? Well, we can't think as clearly. The memory goes down. We're not as sharp and not as focused. And like I said before, one sleepless night can induce insulin resistance in healthy people. So I think I've made a case for why sleep is so important. Let's take a look at some fun facts about sleep, and then we're going to go into depth about some of the science and the sleep cycles and the waves, the brain waves, etc. And this is a really cool infographic, and the link is on the slide. So if you're just listening, it's on the slide that you can look at. Men dream about other men 70% of the time, and that's just what happens. Women dream about men and women equally. It's interesting. This is just silly facts. We can only dream about faces we've seen. That's interesting. So if you see these dark strangers in your dream, then, yeah, you've seen them before, maybe in passing on the subway when you were 17, who knows. 12% of people dream only in black and white. I think I'm one of those. I think I rarely see color in my dreams. I mostly see in black and white. So which animal are you most like? Koalas sleep 22 hours a day. Giraffes sleep only 1.9 hours a day in 5 to 10 minute sessions. I will tell you, I'm definitely more like a giraffe because I sleep less, but it would be really cool if you can get away with 10 to 15 minute sessions and have all your growth and repair happen there. There is supposed to be a sleep gene, and I haven't looked at that to see if I have that, a gene predisposes you to need more or less sleep. 10 days of sleep deprivation can be lethal. So if somebody's put in really adverse situations and torture and that sort of stuff and not allowed to sleep, they could just die from sleep deprivation. So it's possible. This was interesting. 1 in 50 teenagers still wet the bed. And I feel grateful that mine gave it up when they went to kindergarten. So, or maybe a little bit after kindergarten. But yeah, 1 in 50, that's still a lot of kids. And within 5 minutes of awakening, 50% of the dream is forgotten. Within 10 minutes, 90%. So if you're someone who really wants to capture dreams, you feel like you have all these amazing things that are happening, you need to have a pad and paper right there by your bedside, or a dictation that, pick up your phone and dictate into it, because within 5 minutes, 50% of it's gone, within 10, 90%. So have you ever tried to do that, where you tried to explain to somebody a dream that you had, and you start to do it, and you're like, you completely lose it, you think it's still there, but it's not, you lose it, you forget about it. There are people who do dream interpretation, and that there's different symbols that mean things. This is more from the scientific standpoint that we're looking at sleep, but that would be an interesting thing to put in our advanced resources. So let's talk about definitions, right? So the sleep and the brain waves are different brain waves that happen at different stages of sleep. The definition of sleep is considered to be loss of consciousness and reduced responsiveness to external stimuli. So it happens quickly for some. They just fall out. They don't hear a word you're saying anymore. And they don't respond as well. But it depends on the level of sleep. We'll talk about the different levels and which ones are less likely to be stimulated by external stuff. In 1929, a German psychiatrist, Hans Berger, discovered that the electrical activity of the brain could be recorded in brain waves. And now we know that we can do that, and we do them via an EEG, or an electroencephalogram. And the different frequencies are grouped into bands. So, and they're associated with the different stages of sleeping. We'll go into the stages of sleeping in more detail in a moment. So we have the delta waves, 0.5 to 4 hertz, and that's stage 3. The theta waves are stage 1 and stage 3. The alpha waves are when we're wakeful and relaxed. So in meditation, we go for that alpha state, right? That's before you get into that before sleep stage. Stage 2 is sigma waves, 12 to 14 hertz. Beta waves are awake and alert, so 14 to 30, and gamma waves are 30 to 50. So there's a device, it's relatively new on the market. It was developed to help people to meditate. And what it does is it measures the brain waves. And it's relatively inexpensive when you consider EEGs and how, those have been usually the only way to measure this stuff, but we've just come so far in technology. And it's basically this band, this kind of plastic band, I'm not sure exactly what the material is, and it has electrodes in back of it. You put it on your head, and those measure, they measure your brain waves, and you have to position it just right. And then it hooks up, that band hooks into an iPhone or an iPad, and you basically can measure which state you're in. And so it has the program in there that will tell you that you're either alert or in meditation, or when you go to sleep. So what happens is you put it on and you calibrate it, and it measures your brain waves, and it has you do thinking things, right? So awake and wakeful and alert. So it gets a sense of making you do things, so it knows when you're in beta. So you do that, and you measure the thing. You say, like, 1 + 1 = 2, and what color? It asks you questions. You know, what's your favorite color? What color is this? It asks you a bunch of questions that make you think. When it gets enough, it puts that in there. And then it has you do some breathing things, and it gets that. So it gets this kind of calibration. And then you put it on, and you're basically watching, or listening, actually, to the sounds, and you're focusing on your breath. It guides you through various meditation practices. And you basically are sitting there breathing. And when you get into a deep state of relaxation, a deep alpha state, there's the birds tweet. Really cute. When you start to go into beta and you're more wakeful and alert, then it basically gives you the sounds of the waves crashing like a storm is happening. And so you learn by biofeedback technique to tune in to the sounds coming through your headphones and then go back. So if you've ever meditated, you know that when you sit and try to meditate, your monkey mind gets control. So you're breathing and everything's good, and the next thing you're thinking about is, what am I going to make for dinner? How am I going to finish that particular book? And, oh, I have this client over there. How am I going to solve that problem? And you keep going away, and it's after a while that you're there that you pull yourself back in, and the more you practice, the better it gets. Well, this helps you to come back a lot sooner. So it's a really wonderful device, and it's called the Muse, M-U-S-E, and they now have them on Amazon. We had purchased one of those devices at a conference where we heard the developer of it speak, and we bought one, and my husband has been using it, and it's phenomenal. He just says every day he's excited to say how many days in a row he has been doing this meditation, and it helps him to focus. So it's really cool if you want to look into something like that. I know that's an aside, but as long as we were talking about brain waves, I wanted to be sure to mention that. So here's what the EEG and EMG look like during sleep. So the EEG is the encephalogram, which is measuring brain waves. The EMG is measuring your muscle movement. So in wakefulness, you see what the EEG looks like and the EMG looks like. And in non-REM sleep, which is the non-rapid eye movement, which is most of the phases of sleep, the EEG is very active, but the muscles are, it's like boom, 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 there's very little activity. In REM sleep, we have a much more consistent pattern in the brain, very, there's no ups and downs and spikes, it's very, very consistent, and there's very little, if no, activity on the EMG. So that's what sleep cycles look like. This is more for a curiosity's sake. If it's something you want to look into, there's a link there if you really want to look at the neurobiology of sleep. So I want to look at the stages of sleep, because this is something that you need to be able to help, know about, to be able to help someone to figure out their sleep cycles and help them improve their sleep cycles. The brain activity only falls by 10% during sleep. So even though that we're not actively thinking or moving or doing things, there's all kinds of metabolic activities and hormonal activities that are happening during sleep. So it only really drops the brain activity 10%. So stage one is that lightest sleep. It's really that transition sleep. Most of it's in alpha, and we start to slip into beta. Start to just slip into that, but theta is where we're coming out of when we're in that deep sleep. So most of it's alpha, though. So we spend about 50% of our time in those first two stages. So stage one, that light sleep. So if you're in bed, your client's in bed, and they're falling asleep. So the people who have difficulties with the falling asleep, they're having difficulties in this beta state, okay, this alpha state, sorry. okay, and they're easily roused. So what happens is they may be real sensitive to noises around them, to lights around them, and to thoughts that pop into their head. Stage two is considered light sleep. It's the beginning of true sleep. The muscles start to relax, and we lose awareness, you know? So it's very much harder to wake from stage two. Stage three is the deep sleep. We're in theta and delta waves. And then stage four is the deepest sleep of all. That's restorative, or a lot of delta waves, or all delta waves. REM sleep is a little bit different. REM sleep is where we dream. And everybody needs to have REM sleep. Approximately 25% of the sleep should be REM sleep. If you hear people say, "I don't dream," it's possible that they actually don't dream, and that could be very much contributing to health issues. But mostly it's that maybe they don't dream as much and they just don't remember their dreams. So there's two mechanisms going on there. So stage five is deep sleep. The muscles are completely blocked and they're dreaming. Have you ever had this situation where you're trying to wake yourself up out of a dream, you know? Somebody's chasing you with a gun and you know it's, you realize it's a dream, and you try to get yourself up, you try to move your body, and nothing happens. You feel paralyzed. That's basically what happens. And that's the part where the dreaming is happening. So let's look at REM sleep a little bit closer. During REM sleep, the brain's extremely active, right? It's creative. It's creating these awesome stories, right? And the waves are similar to when we're awake. There's theta and alpha that are happening there. The blood pressure increases. The breathing becomes faster and irregular. And if you ever watch somebody who's dreaming, you'll see their eyes moving and sometimes tossing and turning. Like, that happens sometimes. I'll look at my husband and all of a sudden he's like, and he starts to speak. He tries to, but yeah, there's this very fast movement of the eye, but then the breathing, it's not right. The eyes dart back and forth, back and forth. That's why we call it rapid eye movement. And that's where most of the dreaming happens. And the brain completely blocks the muscles, the skeletal muscles. So we're not able, obviously not the the heart cardiac muscles, but blocks the skeletal muscles. So we're just lying there and can't move. We have to have the REM sleep and stage four. We have to have sufficient amount. Whenever somebody's deprived of sleeping, in a good situation, a positive situation, the duration of REM and deep sleep remains the same and the other sleeps reduce. So if you've noticed, maybe you've only had a couple of hours of sleep or 3 hours of sleep, but you've dreamed. That's because your body's preserving and trying to get the most out of getting the REM sleep. Let's look at the effects of sleep on memory. This is cool stuff. So during sleep, long-term memory is formed. So there's neuron structures that represent the memories that are created. And so we have all these little things that have happened during the day. They're in short-term memory. It's during sleep that a lot of that long-term memory is formed. So it's really important to get enough sleep, like for students, which is the people that get the least amount of sleep. They're trying to memorize all the stuff and learn all the stuff and take tests, and yet they stay up all night. And that impacts the ability to take that short-term stuff and put it into long-term, which is probably why when you cram for tests, you do great on the test, and then it just never gets moved into long term. So you study right up to the minute, but it doesn't get stored because you're sleep deprived. So memories that are not as important are discarded, and others are enhanced. And who decides what's most important? Hard to say, but we know that sometimes we remember really silly, stupid things, and we can't remember the smart stuff. So I don't know who's in charge of that, but sometimes it doesn't exactly go the way we expect it to go or want it to go. There are new experiences that are organized into networks. So, you know, your brain is this network. It's just all these neurons, and they're connected, and we make connections, and we make associations between things, and that's how, when we have new experiences during sleep, it actually helps us to coordinate those things. And the process is accountable for, the process of sleep and memory is accountable for late night problem solving. So a lot of times when you are trying to solve a problem before you go to sleep, you're lying there and go, oh, what is this? Oh, I'm going to go to sleep, and you wake up in the morning and have an answer. Doesn't always happen, but it can happen, and I believe we probably train ourselves to do that better. Intensive firing of neurons happens during sleep. And scientists are assuming that dreams are the result of this stimulation, like lots of neurons are being stimulated. And we know dreams sometimes are crazy, right? There's just all these connections that are maybe not, they're making connections between, you know, there's people in your old life, people in your new life, people you want to be meeting, situations, you know, you put back into weird situations. And it's this rapid, intensive firing, and things kind of get a little confused to create these stories that may not be true. Okay? So let's look at deep sleep in more detail. The body regenerates most actively during the deep sleep. So where the REM sleep is really important for pulling things together and synthesizing things, the deep sleep is where a lot of the body regeneration happens. We increase the hormone and increase growth hormone and blood supply during that. On average, people need at least 2 hours of deep sleep per night. And it won't be increased beyond the needed amount, which is quite interesting, because if we don't have enough of the sleep, we're not in bed long enough, the light sleep will be reduced to preserve it. But if you get more sleep, you're most likely not getting the deep restorative sleep. Most likely the extra sleep is actually light sleep. So when someone wakes up and they're tired and they want to go back to sleep, most of the time they're going to go back into either REM, because REM can happen pretty quickly in the earlier morning times, or they're going into light sleep. So there are some studies that impact on the impact of sleep. Stanford University study looked at college students, college football players. They tried to sleep at least 10 hours a night for 7 to 8 weeks. And guess what? It improved their average sprint time. And they had less daytime fatigue, and they had more stamina. So 10 hours a night for college athletes was improving everything. So what can that do for us normal folks, right? What can it do for that client? You know, that's why sleep vacations are so, so valuable. We have people in our ERC program who have loved the sleep vacations and restored so much that twice a month they'll take a 3-day sleep vacation where they sleep for 12 hours. It's amazing what can happen when people do this. And it's borne out by this Stanford University study. There was another pediatrics journal study in 2009 with children ages 7 to 8 who got less than 8 hours of sleep were more likely to be, guess what, hyperactive, inattentive, impulsive. Because what happens when mom takes that kid to the doctor for their annual exam or because she perceives this as a problem, they get diagnosed with ADD and they put on medication. When really what might have helped was taking that kid and putting him or her to sleep more. So let's take a deep look at the sleep cycles. So the pattern is not what you think, right? You would think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So typically the first cycle is stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4. Then we go back to stage 3 and 2, and then we go into stage 5, which is REM. REM usually occurs about 90 minutes after sleep. So stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, back to stage 3, back to stage 2, and then into REM, and then to stage 1. So here's the deal. The number of completed cycles is more important than the number of hours they spend sleeping. So it's not so much I slept this many hours, but how many completed sleep cycles. So when people wake up automatically in the morning, like you just, they always wake up at a certain time, it's generally because they've just completed a sleep cycle. If people have to wake up to an alarm, which the alarm goes off in the middle of a sleep cycle, the whole sleep cycle generally doesn't count towards the number of hours of sleep in terms of the physiologic benefit. So it's the number of completed cycles. So I'm going to share with you a method that you can use to help people determine the length of their sleep cycles and how many sleep cycles and what time they should go to bed to make sure that they have at least 3 completed sleep cycles during the night. When they wake up in mid-cycle, you feel tired throughout the entire day sometimes. So you've probably heard that from your clients, or you've also experienced it yourself, where you had to get up early to catch a flight or whatever, and the alarm went off and you're groggy, and even though maybe you didn't get much less sleep than you normally do, the fact that you woke up in the middle of a cycle throws you off. On the other hand, I've had situations where I've gone to bed at, say, 4 and had to get up at 7. It's not a lot of sleep, but I've woken up at 7 feeling fine without the alarm because I was thinking, oh, I have to get up, but I ended a sleep cycle instead of having the alarm in the middle and felt okay. So those two sleep cycles, which I got, were actually quite good. So let's take a look at how you can help your clients to analyze their sleep cycles. I highly recommend that before you start guiding somebody through this, that you do it on yourself. So here's what you do. You have to do this on days when you don't have to wake up. You're going to do the exercise on days you don't have to get up. But on the days you do need to wake up at a certain time, pay attention to how long it takes you to fall asleep and how you feel when you wake up. So, for example, you go to bed, you know that your alarm is set for 7, you've got to get up at 7. You go to bed at midnight, and you pay attention to how long it takes to fall asleep. Well, nobody really knows exactly when they fall asleep, but you can generally get an idea of, you know, when was the last time you looked at the clock. So if you make a point of just looking at the clock, but that might cause you to take longer to fall asleep. The best way to do it is to have a bed partner and have your bed partner agree that they're not going to go to sleep until you do, and then to just, you know, set the timer and time how long it takes you to fall asleep. So now you get an idea of that. And then you have a sense of how do you feel when you wake up. Do you feel groggy? Do you feel good? Do you feel like, you know, you're ready to go? The next step would be to pick a day or two. Like for people who work during the week, it would be a weekend. You don't need to get up at a specific time. And then you go to bed at your regular time and then just sleep until you wake in naturally. Now, this isn't always an easy thing to do if someone has pets or children, because a lot of folks tell me that, you know, they wake up at a certain time because the pet climbs in bed or because the kid gets up. So for some folks, it's just like, go to a hotel, check it out, you know, go sleep at a friend's house or a neighbor's house where you don't have those interruptions. So if somebody has long-standing chronic sleep issues, they may be more motivated to do that. And when you get up, you note how long you slept. So say you normally go to bed at midnight and you normally set your alarm for 7, but it's Saturday and you go to bed at midnight and you don't set your alarm and you wake up at 8, 9, say 9. So midnight to 9 is what? 8 hours, right? No, 9 hours. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So you go, whoa, I needed 9 hours of sleep. So then you're going to do a calculation on the length of the sleep cycle. And I've got a chart that you can use to try to calculate. This is the tricky part. So in order to calculate the sleep cycle, if you always wake up at a certain time, you're likely to be at the end of the cycle. That's good. That makes it easier. That takes a little guesswork out of it. The rest of this will take some guess and check. So you basically, the average sleep cycle is around 90 minutes. Okay? 90 minutes. Pretty good. Some people are an hour. Some people are 2. So you're trying to get an average, and you're guessing and checking. And I'll show you the chart on the next page to help you to understand it. But you're basically going to say, so say you wake up at 8. And that previous one at 9, and you went to bed at midnight, but it takes you a half an hour to fall asleep, that means that you were asleep for 8.5 hours. If you figure that you're, say, on average 90 minutes, that would be approximately an hour longer than 2, 4, 5 sleep cycles. So 2 sleep cycles would be 3 hours. And so 2 times that is 6. And then if you look at, well, they slept for 7.5 hours, actually that's exactly 5 sleep cycles. So you could say, okay, I think that that's it. So if the person or you, let's say you're testing it on yourself, you fall asleep at midnight and you don't wake up naturally until 9, and you've calculated that it takes about a half an hour for you to fall asleep, That's 8.5 hours. So if we were to look at it and just assume that you had an hour and a half, a 90-minute sleep cycle, that doesn't really work. So we want to look at the chart to kind of calculate what would work for that. If it was 7.5 hours, you woke up after 7.5 hours, that would be 5 sleep cycles. But we know that if you wake up naturally, you were probably at the end of the sleep cycle. And so we're going to figure out, when we look at this handy-dandy chart, how long the cycle was. So let's look at 8.5 in our example. So see down in the first column, the amount of time of sleep. So we have 8.5. And what's your most likely length of the sleep cycle? Most likely length of the sleep cycle is 85 minutes. It could be 102. It's possible, but not likely. It could be 64 or 73. So that's approximately the length of the sleep cycle. And there's other ways to check it. Yeah. So there's other ways to check that. So let's say in our example, we say, let's assume it was 83, right? So if we assume it was 83 minutes, and what we want to do is look to see, well, if it's 83, and let's just say I shorten that, and I say, well, 83, so that 8.5 minus 83, which would be whatever number of minutes it is, let's just see what happens if I set the alarm for that time, if I wake up feeling refreshed, if I actually wake up, you know, when I'm in that light sleep, it just wakes me and I get right back to sleep. Okay, so you can go and read, this is excerpt, the chart is excerpt from a document that I put together called Optimizing Sleep Hormones, and you can click on that link, and it's from page 11 and 12. So, hormones that influence and are influenced by sleep. This leads us into our next section. Insulin, glucagon, cortisol, DHEA. Those are pairs. Growth hormone, leptin, ghrelin, melatonin, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And in our next video, core content video, we're going to go into more details on the endocrinology of sleep. So this concludes our first video in the sleep module. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.